Welcome to Geeks of the North, a hopping gaming podcast from the Bill Purveyors. This week, Antoine and I are talking about the ReaperCon painting competition. What goes into making a competition piece? And what am I going to do and what am I going to enter? So sit back, relax, grab a paintbrush, and enjoy the show. Everyone, welcome to another episode of Geeks of the North. As always, I'm your host, Paul Filio, here with my co-host, Antoine Bergeron. Hey, Antoine, how's it going?
It's going great, great, great and tired.
Great and tired. How's the newborn? How's Juliette?
Oh, she's doing really well. She's so good of a baby. She doesn't cry or also, no, she doesn't cry. That's it. And she does sleep well during the day. And that's the only small point, and it's normal for a kid under 2 months, but
it's still rough.
It's still rough, like the feeding during the night. She doesn't go back to sleep quickly, and she's also a bébé à bras with an arm baby would be a literal tradition. With our son, he didn't like to be held, so he liked to be put down in his crib and sleep like that. But for her, she's probably having some tummy ache, and she likes to be close to us for the heat, and she sleeps better in her arms. Then she does sleep fine in her crib, but we're having problem getting her in her crib after each feeding. So it's harder on us while the feeding are still closed, but once she starts to have more time between them, it's going to get better.
Yeah, those first few weeks with the two-hour feedings are brutal. I remember very clearly. So, and like you said, you know it gets better. So you'll survive.
Oh, yeah.
And I've noticed she's got your hair, too. She's got that crazy full head of hair.
Yeah, that's crazy because Theodore was bald up to 7 or 8 months.
Yeah, Muriel was like that, too.
Juliette has so much hair already. It's crazy. They don't look from the same family. She's also a lot darker skinned than the other was. So that's strange. It all fits. Like she does have more coming from my father than Theodore did. Like my father is more dark skinned. He's really hairy. So it kind of fit.
So it skipped the first child, went to the second one?
Yep, something like that.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you and the family are doing well. We've had some difficulty, again, trying to record. And this is actually the second time we're trying episode 13, because we took so long recording the first segment of it before we get to the last segment that none of the stuff in the first segment was relevant anymore.
Yeah, all the news and events were long past.
we're doing horrible at this podcast thing now. We got to get back into our old groove.
Yeah, timing doesn't help us with all the cons, all your work. Exactly. You had work trips, the baby on my side.
So. Exactly. Anyway, so the show, hopefully, we'll get out there. I'm going to do my best to get it out there this week. So let's keep our fingers crossed for that one. Yep. And we've got it's going to be a light show. Probably only about an hour and a half or so. Maybe we'll run long. Depends on how much yapping we do. But it's our standard format. So we've got the hobby time. And then we're going to talk about the games we played. We haven't done a bit of trimming. So we're not really going to talk about events. We'll just announce events when they get announced. We're not going to keep repeating them every week after week like we were doing. Because like Antoine and I discussed, you end up with events like a year away that you're mentioning, twice a month for the next 12 months. It makes no sense. So we'll probably do when they're first announced and maybe do a reminder later on just like an update or whatever.
Yep.
But we're not going to do it every week, which I think makes sense.
Absolutely.
So we're still doing the news. We're still doing the mailbag. And then we've got our main topic, of course. And today we're going to be talking a little about prepping for a painting competition. Because, I'll explain the whole story when we get to that segment. But I'm going to be painting something for a competition. And it's kind of short notice, so we're going to talk about what thoughts are going into that. All right. So I think that's what covers everything.
I think so.
Okay, so let's go to hobby time. So my hobby time, I haven't been doing as much as I would like. Obviously, with Adepticon now past me, and we're actually going to be having an Adepticon recap episode. I should mention that before. Once we can get everyone together, maybe we'll record it later this week or early next week, while it's still kind of fresh in our memories. But with Adepticon, you know, being around the corner at the time, I was really just working on trying to finish up the few Elven models I needed for my army. And I did that. I did manage to paint 2 full units of Illyrian Reavers. I only needed 6 for the army list, but I painted 10 because I had 10, so I might as well paint them all so I don't have to go back and work on them again. And to be honest, I actually finished those my first night at Adepticon because I realized I'd missed a couple things and I didn't like the way something looked, so I just touched up all 6 models I'd taken with me.
Is it the only thing you had to work on at Adepticon?
Yes.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, aside from the stuff I worked on in painting classes.
Yeah, which is normal.
And that was it. Aside from that, I've been cleaning. So my hobby room every winter kind of becomes like the black pit of the house. The room has no heat. For whatever reason, the house was designed with no heater in that room, no radiator, no nothing. So it kind of just gets relegated to storage in winter because it's freaking cold in there. So consequently, I don't use it. So I just start piling stuff and piling stuff. And then springtime comes around and I have to basically get like a truck in there and a backhoe to dig my way through. So I don't know how many boxes of stuff I've thrown out and recycling and whatever. So I've actually cleared up my painting area and my workspace and a good sizable chunk of the floor. So I'm pretty happy right now. I can actually get in the room and move around.
That's
exciting.
Good.
It's exciting. Yeah. And because I've cleaned up that space, I've actually got space now to start prepping models to paint.
And not use the kitchen table.
Yeah, which will make my relationship with my wife a lot better. So I've been prepping, cleaning and prepping some Wild West Exodus figs. So I picked up the Holy Order of Man at Adepticon. I picked up the starter box and a couple other, I think they're called underbosses. And the figs are gorgeous. A couple things sold me on them. I really like the look. The models for the army, like the showpiece models, were painted by James Wapple, and they're absolutely gorgeous. So they look really, really sold me. And they don't have the super cybernetic cowboys versus aliens look of the rest of the factions because they're against the use of that technology. So they just look like armored bonums. So I really kind of like their look. And it turns out their playstyle is kind of awesome. They have the most expensive basic troops in the game. And the reason they have that is because the army is super synergistic. All the bosses and underbosses basically buff everyone else in the army. So long as they're alive, like, you know, like say a specific underboss may buff everyone's marksmanship by 1. So basically it lowers their target number that they need to hit by. Basically anyone in that army on the table from the faction will get a buff so long as that underboss is alive. So it makes my basic troops really, really good. Consequently, they cost like 3 times as much as anyone else's basic troops. But that just means they need less models to play a game, so I'm all for that.
Less paint.
Yeah, exactly. So I've been cleaning those models, and I'm going to start gluing those together over the next couple days. They are gorgeous casts, too. I kind of was against the game originally. I've got some problems with some of the things that the company has said and done over the years. And I was like, oh, it's just another skirmish game. The theme doesn't do much for me. But I have to say, the models are gorgeous. So I picked up a faction, and so did Yom. So we're going to be playing some of that. And I've also been cleaning, or actually repairing and touching up a Mirus miniature giant that I bought a while back. Because I'm going to be painting that for a competition. And I've also been prepping some Wrath of Kings figures that I picked up a couple years ago. Again, because they look nice and I figured they'd be good like pieces just for painting purposes. I don't want to play Wrath of Kings. I don't particularly care for the rule set. But the models are gorgeous.
When did you pick those? Are they the plastic or the...
No, they're resin. That's okay, how long ago I bought them. So before their Kickstarter, so like 2 years ago.
So the year before I went with you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think I actually may have bought them at TempleCon the year I went.
Yeah, Yom bought some that year too. So
yeah,
that's possible.
So I picked up some of the werewolves, and I got a couple other figs that I was given 2 years ago when I did a demo of it.
Yeah, the figure are really nice. I can't talk about the game, but the models do look good.
Yeah, so I'm going to be painting up some of those just for fun. I'm going to finish up also a couple of figures I started at Adepticon. We got given, in all the painting classes, we got given these Darksword miniatures. And I promised Sam from Games and Gears. The brushes I took to Adepticon with me were my Games and Gears Ichiban Studio brushes.
Mm-hmm.
And, the classes are 2 hours, so about an hour of painting done on the model. And I showed him how far I'd gotten in that hour. And so did Yom, actually. And he was like, oh, you guys, you have to finish the models and then send me pictures and I'll post them.
Because you were printing with his brushes.
With his brushes, yeah. So I said I would do it, so I will do it. And what else? Oh, yeah. I picked up... I don't know if you're familiar with the line of paints from Vallejo called Liquid Gold.
Nope.
Okay, so this is a line of metallics that are alcohol-based. They're sold in the rack with the model color paints. But they're like in a bigger jar, and they're alcohol-based. So when I was at Adepticon, I saw a Chaos Army, and forgive me, I can't remember the gentleman's name. He listens to the show. I know his web name is Bubbles.
Okay, yeah.
He wrote a tutorial, actually, on... what is that website? Like Magnificent Bastards or something? It's I think it's Magnificent Bastards. It's a mini painting website.
They are affiliated with the guys from Not Paint Hammer. Another podcast I listen to. I'm drawing a blank too. But yeah, Magnificent Bastard does sound right.
Okay. So he had a Slaanesh... Well, he had a Chaos Army. It was, Khorne and Slaanesh and a bunch of other things. And he painted everything using the little liquid gold line. It's not just golds. So there's coppers, golds, silvers, white gold, and they are gorgeous. The metallics are very, very highly reflective. They look way better, in my opinion, anyway, than the regular metallics. They're so smooth, and they seem to blend seamlessly into each other, which regular acrylic metallics don't do.
Yep.
The downside is that because they're alcohol-based, you have to use a synthetic brush. You can't use a natural fiber brush because you'll destroy it. And you cannot thin with water. You have to thin with 99% like isopropanol, like pure alcohol.
Okay.
And the paint settles, like you have to shake it like a madman, you pour a little bit out, the paint settles very quickly, the pigment, so you have to keep stirring it, and you have to keep refreshing it with more alcohol medium, as a medium, to keep it, liquid flowing.
Because alcohol evaporates so quickly.
Yeah. So working with it is not easy, but the results are like, wow. So I picked these up.
I'll have to see it.
Yeah, and the website was You Magnificent Bastards, by the way. I just looked it up while we were talking. And so he had this army done with it, and the metallics were beautiful. And I'm like, what did you use? So he told me. And I'm like, you know what? I've heard a lot about these over the years. I'm going to go pick them up. So I went to Jack Hobby in Laval today.
Mm-hmm.
And I picked up two bottles last night at Gamer's Vault. They had a couple in stock. And then I happened to be at Jack Hobby for something else today. While I was there, I looked, and they had the rest of the line, so I picked up the rest of the line. So $30 later, I have like five jars of paint, and we'll be playing with that. And again, these the other thing is that these paints, you can't airbrush with them because the pigment is so heavy and so thick.
It will just clog.
It'll just destroy your airbrush.
Okay.
And if you do introduce water into the paint bottle, the metallic paints will rust.
Okay.
So you really have to make sure you've got brushes that you haven't contaminated with water, and don't be a brush licker with these paints.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say. So, that's it for me. Not super prolific, but a lot of little things going on. How about you, Antoine? What you got going on hobby-wise?
A bunch, because we haven't recorded in a month, almost.
Yeah, we've been bad.
I started working on my Relic Knight Shattered Swords, my paladins. I got my airbrush out, for the first time in I don't know how long since I've moved, almost so more than half a year. So that it's addictive. So I did Zenithal Prime, all my paladins, and still having Primer in the cup. Why not went for my Stonehaven Dwarf for one of the painting competition piece I want to do. Did my Mandragora from Endless Endless Tactic, did a bunch of Trollbloods I had already assembled, and just went to town with with Primer. So the Trolls and most of the other models went back into the cupboard. But at least they're primed now. So I did that. And once they were primed, I tried some Ghost Tint for the Shattered Swords. But I only had one, which you and Yom mentioned was more purplish on your side. But it's... Give me 1 second. Not that one. Like the oil one
oil from discharge. The starter.
Yeah, oil discharge. And mine doesn't come out purple at all. It's come like deadly nightshade, the whole game workshop color. Like, so a dark, dark blue.
Yeah, so that's... I think that's what you meant. Have you ever painted like a dark, dark blue on black and have it look purple?
Yes.
Like with a paint? Same idea, right?
So yeah, but it didn't do that.
Oh, because when I did, I mean, I look at it and I can tell it's a dark blue, but when you paint it over a surface, in my case, when I tried it, it gave it like a purple look, even though I knew that the base color was...
Yeah, I see what you mean, because I tried to... The army I was going for 40k was Alpha Legion, which I did paint dark blue. And I had an old bottle of Deadly Nightshade from maybe 1990s or something like that. And I've been looking for a paint to replace that for a while. And most of the other ones I got from Game Workshop, they do come out purple when on a black. When the bottle is clearly blue, but when applied on a black, the color change. The light doesn't play the same.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but it didn't do that for the oil discharge. They came out really, really blue, which is not what I was going for. So I toyed with other paints and ended up with a light purple. I wanted something different than the official white and blue, which they look fine, but I didn't want to paint white on models. I was going for a quick paint job. White is not quick to paint.
Hey, you don't say.
Yeah, so I went with a purple, and I in the past months, I've been painting more and more pink and purple, and it's a fun color to play with. So the only thing I was afraid is it would come out too close to the pink I used on my Pacer for the Cersei faction. But in the end, the Pacer is really bright. The color is really saturated. But the purple is matte, is not saturated at all. It's desaturated. And they do look completely different on the table. So I'm happy with the test model I have right now. So I did one of my Swordsworn, the basic paladin. I did the whole armor, and I light shaded everything, and I'm really happy with it. So when I do have time to work on my paladin again, I have the right way to go. The path is light up for me. So yeah, I just need time to work on them. And that's because I started doing commission, like I mentioned in the previous episodes, and I did get my first commission, which how's that going? It's going well. With the baby coming a bit early, it did eat up some of the time I had for working on that piece. So I'm not late on it, but I won't be in the small time frame I gave to the client, but the client agreed that it wasn't rushed anyway, so my estimate was too short in the end. But it's coming great. I worked on the base need to be like the piece is Lilith, Reckoning of Everblight. It's a battle engine, a huge base they call it in War Machine.
It's Christmas Lilith.
Yeah, Christmas lit on a sleigh. Where she's Thierry, drowned by two reindeer.
Exactly. She's being pulled by the reindeer or whatever they are.
Yeah.
Like the raptor cavalry type.
Yeah, exactly. So she's the sleigh is drawn by those two creatures. And the client wanted it was going on a frozen lake with the ice breaking behind the chariot. And that's something I never did. So I did a bunch of tests with acrylic.
Okay.
Why am I drawing a blank?
Like plexiglass, you mean, or something?
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. I was looking for that word.
So I was thinking in terms of painting, not in terms of like...
Yeah. No, like no, acrylic, the material.
Acrylic medium, acrylic paint, acrylic... Yeah.
Yeah. I had plexiglass left from the secret project, from the Space Station Yamato. One of the thing I did with that was do a hub that was looking out into space. And I painted a space backdrop an inch behind the plexiglass plate to give some sense of depth. But when I got that plexiglass piece, it was a lot bigger than I needed for the space station. So I had some left. So I tried to give some sense of depth into the lake by cutting down the trim of the base and gluing that onto some plastic iron. And I cut the plexiglass to fit into the trim of the base.
Wow. And that could not have been easy.
It wasn't that bad because the first piece, I just broken some piece of plexiglass to fit in my test base. I did a 40 millimeter one just to see how the look was. And the look was fine. So after that, to do the big piece, I did trace it and cut it with a jigsaw.
Okay, yeah. So if you have a jigsaw, then that makes it a lot easier.
So with the jigsaw, it was fine. And I just had some sanding to do to make it fit right.
Yeah, to round it out.
Yeah. And after that, if people who follow me on Twitter saw, I posted a piece with the plexiglass, the jigsaw, and a hammer near it. And the armor was to create the broken ice pattern. That's what that was. Yeah.
I saw that, and I had no idea what the heck I was looking at. I'm like, why is there a hammer in this picture? I don't get it.
I wanted to share the picture, but I haven't shared them yet because I wanted to have the base done completely, and I'm missing one or two steps to do in-progress shots of the construction. And the hammer was there to strike slowly a pattern where the ice was supposed to be broken because the plexiglass I have is coated with a sheet of plastic on each side. So even if I break it, it doesn't fly everywhere. It's all just stuck between the two plastic sheets.
Right.
So I broke the pattern I wanted into the plexiglass and I tore off one of the side of plastic and was able to piece by piece place the plexiglass into my base.
And I have to say it looks really cool because you sent me some pictures of what you'd done.
Yeah.
And I thought it was really, really neat and I had no idea how the hell you'd done it. So, well done. For a first attempt, man, that's pretty crazy.
I'm really
happy. Your customer's going to be super happy.
Yeah, from the work in progress piece I sent him, he's happy right now. And to give also, I checked a lot of picture online of ice and broken ice and stuff like that. So I did, once it was broken and I removed the plastic sheet, I did give just a small shot of airbrush white with some varnish in it to dilute it, just to give a small white coating on the top. The ice had been scratched or snow was deposed on it, just a tiny bit to remove some of the transparency, but still have most of it. And after that, I broke the piece off, glued them for the part that was still unbroken. The big main part I didn't strike with the hammer. And after that, for the tiny pieces at the end, I just took some of them, placing them with some spacing, and also cut into some of them and glued them at angles to make as if the ice was moving with the water. And the rest I filled with water effect.
Yeah, like I said, it looks amazing.
Yeah, I'll post a mini tutorial once the base is done. So right now it's all glued. I started working on the other side of the base is like the shore of the lake with rocks coming out, and I'm only missing the snow on the shore and on some part of the lake. So once that will be done, probably it will be done by next episode, I'm pretty sure. I'll share that on my blog and on the Facebook page for the podcast.
What are you going to use for snow? Are you using a flock? Are you using a baking soda technique? Are you using glass? What's the plan?
I have some snow, but I don't know which company is making them. Making it. Give me 1 second. Oh, it's Woodland Scenics.
Yeah, I have the Woodland Scenics snow.
It's not flock.
It's weird. It's granular.
Yeah.
It almost feels like salt or something.
Yeah, but it's smaller than salt.
Of course, yeah.
And I used that previously. And you can get different results depending on how you mix it and with what you mix it.
Like, yeah, you're planning on mixing it with some white glue or something? Or
For my trolls, I'm painting them with in like a northern tundra look. And I want the snow to be appearing like it's melting. So I paint it with water effect.
I was going
to
say water effects, yeah.
Yeah, I'm mixing it with water effects for the snow that's already started to melt. And less water effect, more glue, and a bit of white paint for place where the snow is still thicker and hasn't started to melt.
Yeah, because if you don't mix it with stuff, and a lot of people don't necessarily realize that when you use a snow flock, whether it's the Woodland Scenics or the Gale Force 9 or whatever, if you try applying it directly to the base or the model, it's going to look like you're trying to like powder sugar, like a powder sugar donut.
Yeah.
It's not going to look like snow. It's going to look like you dumped white dust or flour on your model.
You could do that over if there's supposed to be deep snow, just for the top to give some.
Oh yeah, to give some texture, like the unpacked some powder texture or something
on top of it, but yeah. not just that.
Yeah, you'd have to green stuff the base, give the base some sort of texture or
yep,
or depth to it, right?
Yeah.
Because if you just try using it like you would use sand on a base,
it
doesn't look right at all.
Yeah, that's what I did for the shore. Most of it, I did pick 3 or 4 real rocks to come out of the ground,
and it's good
and
to have
the rest
some
is done in epoxy sculpt. To give to make the shape of the hill. So
awesome.
Yeah. So the base is almost done, and I started the painting. So the base color are done. I'm working on some of the shading from the armor plate and stuff like that. So it's going pretty well. I'm happy with the speed especially with the time, the amount of time I have right now with the new kib. I'm happy I'm where I am right now. Work is starting back tomorrow, but I'll have the evening, and next weekend is Easter weekend, in which I have both the Friday and the Monday off, so I'll be able to put more time onto the piece.
Oh, that's a good point. We've got Easter holiday coming up. I don't know what day I get off yet.
Yeah, I get both, so I'm I'm happy
you
with that.
Bastard. I will get one, and maybe I can squeeze for both. Get some painting time in.
If you do, I'm free Hobby on Friday day. Because the kid is not here. It's going away with Mary to the family. So
I'm right there with you, Antoine.
Friday could be a hobby day.
Great minds.
Yeah. So on top of that commission piece, I did finish the Mandragora for Endless Fantasy Tactics. I started back in the maybe a month ago when we got the when I got the Kickstarter stuff, I did the unboxing, and now it's painted. That figure is so fun. Was so fun to paint.
I can't remember if we talked about that in the failed episode 13 or in the actual episode 12. But yeah,
don't remember.
The Mandragora fig is awesome looking. I really, really love it. Oh, by the way, Matthew and Emily?
Yeah.
Send their regards. I saw them at Adepticon. They were in the secret weapons booth. And
it looks like they did well.
Yeah. I think they sold out most of their inventory. And I talked with Matt about casting, mm-hmm. and he was like, "Yeah, we basically had to redo all the molds because when they first started casting in house, like we talked about this before, how the casts were pretty horrid." And he's like, yeah, basically, when we took over the casting, our old caster gave us some instructions. We tried doing it his way. Nothing worked. We basically had to go back to like square one, redo the molds, and teach ourselves how to cast properly. Because whatever he was trying to tell us to do wasn't working. So that, that explains why the new casts are so much better.
Yeah. And it works. The new casts are so much better. I don't know if you have some from the first one. But I do, and they aren't that great. And the plastic, the resin is also more brittle. I don't know if they changed the mix or the changed supplier.
You're being very kind, by the way.
Yeah. Well, it depends on which piece.
So I have the Wizard, the Pugilist, the, I think she's an Alchemist.
Yeah.
And I think I have the Swordsman or whatever.
The Squire, maybe?
Yeah, Squire.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of not super sculpts.
Well, for those models, the problem is also coming from the sculpts, not just the casting.
Yeah.
With the second Kickstarter, they got some new sculptors and some pretty big name and really good sculptors too.
Privateer Press sculptors and stuff. Yeah. Like, people have done a lot of good work.
Yeah.
I think what threw me the most about the original sculpts were the eyes, because they tried to sculpt in 3D pupils. And the pupils, instead of being like, it's weird. So the Alchemist, she's wearing glasses and stuff. And the way the eyes are sculpted, it looks like the pupils are actually like little nubs on the eye, as opposed to being like holes in the eye, or like I've seen some people do where they try to like, they make a depression in the eye where the pupil should be to make it easier to paint or whatever. They actually seem to do the inverse.
Yep.
And the pupils look like little nubs on the surface of the eye. It's really weird.
So that one was fun. I had so much fun, and I had problem deciding a color scheme, and I kind of wish I ordered more of it to be able to paint it in different color, because it's like a plant creature, and I went with a bright green scheme with some colored leaf on it, but I could have done like an autumn theme.
Orange and browns would look really good.
Like a spring theme with really colorful pastel tone, and so it's really a cool piece to paint.
Well, we can get more, right? I mean, they're manufacturing
it. I'll probably get more. just for the fun of painting it. I don't know how good it is in the game. I haven't tried that profile yet. But just to be able to paint more. And it's pretty quick to paint, too. So that's a cool piece.
Well, it's almost chibi-like, right?
Almost, yeah.
I can see it being a fun, quick, easy paint. Yeah. Well, the whole game's anime themed, so.
Yep. Yeah. After that, I painted a Winter Troll for the Donate or Paint Challenge. That was launched by the Chain Attack guys. That's a podcast, and they also have some videos and stuff online. And it's a charity drive to help one of their local player who got some medical issues and got crazy bill to pay because of that, can't work as much. He can't paint anymore, also because of the side effects. And he was a huge lover of painting miniatures. So the idea behind the challenge is a bit like the ice bucket challenge that was all the craze last year. So you either paint a model and or donate money to the cause. So in my case, I chose to paint a Winter Troll, which I had to paint anyway for the Color Tormund team for Club Chaos. So I went for that. Thanks to Yom for the challenge. And I also forwarded the challenge to Trailer Friend, and I saw no result.
I was one of those people challenged, and I will be donating because I had no time to paint.
Anymore. Yeah, the timing was not good for you.
It was in that crazy week of like 60 hours of work in 1 week and 3 days to paint a model when I didn't even get home for 3 days. So
You had a big work event that weekend on top of it.
Yeah, and then I flew to California on the Monday and was gone for another week.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was like a mean trick, Antoine. That's what that was.
Yeah. Well.
That's okay. Donating for a good cause is always good.
Yes. And lastly, that's a small thing I've been doing in the past 2 weeks, is my son really liked Play-Doh. But he doesn't like to destroy the stuff he does. So he likes to create stuff in Play-Doh and let it dry to be able to play with it. But Play-Doh doesn't dry
it hard. Cracks.
It cracks. Some part of it, there's some shrinkage, and it doesn't really work like that. So I got out some Fimo, which is oven clay, oven baked clay. And we started sculpting some stuff in Fimo with him. And Az is into the, he's into Pokemon right now. He's watching the one of the old series on Netflix. So we started sculpting some small, like tiny Pokemons, like maybe 10, 15 millimeter high Pokemons. And so I've been sculpting and painting all the details I can do in Fimo because at 15 millimeter and without baking it between steps, it's just too hard to use multiple colors. So I'm sculpting all of them in one color and do the coloring by painting it miniature, the miniature way.
I didn't even know you could color Fimo.
Oh yes, it paints really easily. So, to us on, I used primer and some, but not all of it, and it's not coming out. So, it's going, it's working really well. I'll post a picture of the small, the first four we did. They're really small. They're not that great. It was some old Fimo my sister gave me maybe 10 or 15 years ago. So there are some transparency issue because it didn't dry exactly the right way, or the mix was just too hard.
Yeah, but this is,
but
you know,
still it
to
was
entertain
fun.
Your four-year-old son, right?
This yeah.
For competition, so.
Yeah, exactly. So they're in his room, and
he's happy?
Them. Oh, yeah, he's really happy.
Well, then that's all that matters.
Yeah. And that's it for my hobby. It was a lot, but...
Yeah, well, it's our short episode is not going to be so short. So I'm going to talk about the games I played.
Yep.
I'm done. Okay, Antoine, how would you play? Would you play anything?
You played, but they were during
all
the Adepticon event.
Exactly.
So we'll talk about them in the next show.
Exactly. So
okay.
I'm just going to skip my games, and we'll go right to yours.
I did one, which was about 4 weeks ago before Julius was born. So that's a while back. I did another Relics game with Yom. Relics,
the mandatory plug.
Gaming. Yep, the mandatory plug. I tried my Blue Tenants for a second time, and this time with the right points. So we did play 400 points on each side. My Blue Tenants versus his Nuems. And this time, playing with the right size, not being underplayed by 40 or 50 points, I got utterly destroyed. So it was even worse than when I was playing with underpointed.
When Yom is not cheating, you did worse?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well done, sir. Well done.
Yeah, I'm really good at this game. The scenario, we were using one of the official tournament scenarios for the game. And there are a bunch of objectives on the game, on the table. And for the first four turns, some of the objectives explode randomly. So
that sounds like fun.
Yeah, and the explosion killed more stuff than I did over the full game.
That's bad, Antoine.
Yeah, I know. I did wound stuff, but Guillaume has a bunch of ways to repair his Nuems, depending on which model. And the few things I did wound, I wasn't able to kill before they were repaired. And the rest, I just wasn't able to hit at all, so... It went really, really, really bad.
But you had fun?
Yeah. Well, I love the game, but it's beginning to get a bit tedious to always get trounced with that faction. So for next game, I did get receive... Oh, that's true. I did receive the rest of my crowdfunding project from Thor Gaming. So I do have some new models to add to my faction, to my Britannians. But I also have my Arknars, which is another faction. I could try against the Nuem to see if they would fare better. Or if Young is just too much of a good opponent.
It'd be interesting to find out if the Arknars fare better than the Britannians. I want to call them Britonians, but wrong game.
Yeah, Britannians.
Britannians.
The puppets.
All right. Well, so that finishes up our hobby and gaming. So why don't we take a quick break, and then we'll come back and we'll do our fan mail. We'll talk about what's new in the news.
That's good.
All right. Be right back, geeks. All right, we're back. So let's hit the fan mail. So we've got Sarah's question of the week. We haven't had one of those in a while. So what brought you to tabletop wargaming? What got you hooked? I'll take this one first. So Warhammer 40K Space Marines is what got me hooked. I am the stereotypical miniature gamer. I went to a gaming store with some friends. Actually, not even. I'd seen them playing Space Hulk. And my buddy was playing, instead of the default miniatures, he had some metal Space Wolf Terminators he was using. And I thought those were awesome. And then years later, I was in a store with a buddy who was going to pick up some 40K stuff. And I started buying Space Marines. And I didn't play the game for years. I think for about 6 years, I just bought Space Marines, and I painted them a little bit, and I had, you know, I had them out on top of the microwave in the kitchen. That was their display pedestal. And I had one of the old Rhinos, one of the old Razorbacks with the las cannon, two plasma guns, and then, you know, a tactical squad and some of the old metal Terminators and an attack bike too. That was it. That was my miniature collection for years and years. And then one day we decided we were going to actually start playing 40K, and then it was all downhill from there. How about you, Antoine? What got you in?
The first minis I got were RPG miniatures, but they were just mostly visual aids.
Yeah, I did that too. I had D&D minis and stuff, the Dragonlance stuff in high school. But that wasn't wargaming, right?
That wasn't wargaming.
Yeah.
What was my first minis were the Warhammer Fantasy 4th Edition starter box. The big red box with the elves and orcs on top, on the cover.
And nice.
Yeah, that's when we started back in high school. And I remember playing on the floor. And
the spears.
The spear. I think I already said that, or maybe it was in the previous recording we did. I don't remember, but the spears for the goblins, all the goblins, it was only one pose, so they were all having their spears straight up, and it was really pointy. So we were playing floor armor back in that time, so we were using the whole room as game board on the floor, and trying to get up, I put my hand down beside me and not checking before, and I did push my end through the spearman unit, and realizing something was there, I lifted my end, and the unit lifted with it. So I had the 30 or 40 little goblin spearmen all poked through my fingers and palm.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Adding some realistic blood effects to the spears, eh?
Yes. Right. And that was my first box, and that the orcs and goblins were my my main army for a while, and just the visual effect of the game and the special strategy and everything, I fell in love, and wargaming has been my main hobby since then, so for over 20 years. So
yeah visually it just does something, eh?
Yes, having the 3D effect, and especially now that we play on real terrain and not just on floors or on kitchen table,
Yeah, and it's so immersive, right?
Yeah, with the painted miniatures and the scenario piece and all the sceneries and the table effects and everything. It's just so cool. It's not just a board game with the wood counters and plastic and some cardboard chits. It's not the same.
No, absolutely not. It's totally not the same as what we're used to, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, my first war game wasn't even miniatures. It was a board game published by TSR called Greyhawk Wars. And it was a battle game with cardboard tokens. And your cardboard tokens had basically an unwounded and a wounded side. Yeah, and then they were dead, so they were removed. But that was like my first war game. And then this, you know, to evolve from that to the miniatures, it like changed everything.
Yeah, I played war game after starting playing miniatures game. Because I started miniatures game when I was, what, maybe 13 years old. And I just couldn't get into card encounter war gaming. I tried Bells of Glory, I think, which is Axis and Allies clone, French clone, something like that. And I just couldn't get into it. I was missing the 3D effect and the painting.
You needed the visual component, eh?
Yep. Yeah.
Cool. All right. So I guess we'll answer that. So I guess we'll move on to the next question, which is from Mike, Der Spieler. So what do you guys think is the most innovative mechanic in tabletop gaming in the last 5 years? So, I've been thinking about that. I mean, it's probably over 5 years. Well, it's definitely over 5 years. But I think the introduction of a resource mechanic into miniature games has really made them more interesting. I like the fact there's more to do than just, you know, slaughter your opponent. I really like the bit of micromanagement on your side. So things like, and I know it's been more than 5 years, but like focus in War Machine, mm-hmm. I thought was an amazing concept. And then Fury was even, I like Fury management even better. Because it gives you something to have to do with your models. It's another level of strategy and planning, which I really enjoy.
But yeah, definitely Malifaux has that too, with the Weirdstone.
Soulstones?
Yeah.
Yeah. Though I think they've changed, I'm not up to date on second edition Malifaux, but I believe they've changed how you can use Soulstones to make them less powerful.
They changed the power level of the effects, but it's still there.
Yeah. And speaking of Malifaux, the other resource mechanic I really like, because I like their, not resource mechanic, the other mechanic I really like is their card mechanic. I like the alternative to the die. I think it's really cool, the whole I have a hand of cards and the cheating fate and the, you know, playing your combats and stuff out with a deck of cards. I thought was just a nice twist. It's a, you know, another way to do that random thing without having to roll a die.
Yeah, I like the also that you don't just draw cards, you also have a hand.
Yeah,
that you can manage what
and
you
the,
want
and
to
the,
do.
And you're like, okay, am I going to play this card? Do I, you know, I want to cheat fate or whatever. How high do I go?
Yeah.
Like, do I drop the big card or do I try to go in between and hope I can still get ahead? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I like that extra level of thinking involved.
On my side, I also have two in mind. I really like the activation dashboard mechanic in the Relic Knights. It kind of remind me of Final Fantasy RPG, GRPG and stuff like that, where there's like a timing of the events are
right.
The modeling activating or character activating into the in the RPG, and you have to plan in Relic Knight. The dashboard is composed of 2, 3, 4 model. The queue is composed of 2 or depending on the game size, 2, 3, 4, maybe 5 models. And each time you activate a model, it goes out of the first model in the queue goes out, and you replace it with one of your idle model. So you have to check the your opponent's queue to see what's in it. What will you need? Do you take the model that just activated and put it back into the queue, or do you go for something else on the board that might be more useful, or that's closer to an objective you need to interact with, or stuff like that? So that's really interesting. There's some way to abuse it right now, which they are working on for the game, but I like the overall concept of it.
Yeah, I thought that was a neat concept when I played the demo. And the demo I played was horribly broken and just all done wrong because it was really early days for the game.
Yeah.
Long before the Kickstarter, it was just like...
Before the official rules.
Yeah. And the guy who gave me the demo had only gotten the rules that morning. Like an hour before the demo. If I remember correctly,
they were the pamphlet that were in the old car box.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that was not the same.
But even then, yeah. I liked that dashboard. I thought that was really cool. There was a bunch of other problems with the game at the time. Like, you were always resource starved. You can never do what you wanted to do. But the idea of... it's almost like pre-plotted movement, like an X-Wing or something, right? With the dials where you're pre-planning stuff.
Yeah, pre-planning activation instead of your movement.
Yeah. Yeah, I said movement, but pre-planned activation. And I think there's a similar concept in the new Star Wars Armada game, though it's like a blind concept where you plan several moves in advance, or several turns in advance. And depending on the size of the ship, the bigger ships have to plan more turns in advance because they're slower to react. So like a Star Destroyer, I don't know how deep the stack is, but... may have a 5 or 6 card stack, whereas a Corellian Corvette may have a 3 card stack. So the Corvette can react to stuff faster because it's smaller.
Oh, that's nice.
So I thought that was a neat mechanic. Yeah.
Yeah. In the same kind of pre-plotting activation, I really like the War God of Egyptus way of doing it. You had to at the start of each turn determine what you have with.
No, I'm just laughing at the fact that you always can bring up some strange game that, like, you and 3 other people know about in the world.
Nah, that's it. It's not that bad.
No, I know. It's not that bad, but it's... If it wasn't for the Kickstarter they ran last year, it probably would be that bad. I don't know how many people know about War Gods of Egyptus, right?
Yeah.
But War Gods, I think it was War Gods of Olympus was the one they ran last year, right?
Yeah, for the Kickstarter.
It was so that may have gotten them some... some acclaim and some
people back.
Some screen time, But, yeah, aside from that, no one would know what War Gods of Egyptus was, even though it's a cool system.
Yeah, it's a fantasy mass combat game, a bit like Warhammer Fantasy. But instead of activating your unit one by one, you have a stack of possible order you can give them, and you place one beside every unit, a bit like you do in... with your pre-planned movement in the flight pad system for the X-Wing and Star Wars, everything. But there's a charge, advance, back, set defense, and stuff like that. And when you start activating, you have an initiative check, and the winner chooses which unit activates first. But this doesn't have to be one of your unit. You might force your opponent to activate one unit, and it might be to his detriment because he might set his archer to shoot, but he wanted for them to go last after your stuff have moved. But you could pick them if you win the initiative and make them shoot before you get in range. If they add the shooting order, which you don't know, so it's a guess. It's a guess most of the time.
You never know what they're doing.
Yeah. So you could try to double guess your opponent. It's a really, really cool system and another way of playing with the activation sequence or in how to set your stuff. So that wasn't in my doc. So I do have 3 ideas then: the Direct Knight activation, the War Gods of Olympic activation, and the last one is the Tuit mechanic in relics. So second blood.
you gotta have the plugs.
Yeah. Instead of having a target number for the dice, you have to hit doubles. So let's say my guys have a combat score of 4. Then you roll 4 dice and you look for any doubles. And that's a hit in the game. There's nothing else. There's no other modifier. You might have to re-roll the dice or add 1 or minus 1 to the result of one of your die, depending on the abilities each model have. But that's it. It's a really simple, but it does play with the math. You can't play, you can't know, like, okay, if I add a die and it's a 4+, it's 50% more chance to have another hit. It's not the same. When you add a dice to the pool and try to one die more to get the doubles, it's playing with weird maths and stuff like that, or trying to get 2 hits with the same roll because you try to get 2 doubles into your roll. The maths are crazy and you can't really math hammer it the same way you could with regular dice rolls with regular target numbers. So I do like that mechanic. It's the first time I saw one. I saw it used in a miniature war game.
Cool. Yeah, I like the idea that it's it makes it more challenging to kind of guess the probability of certain things. I don't know. I mean, that's a strategy too, but I do like the fact that it changes up the norm, you know.
Yep. And that's it. That's enough.
All right. So there you go, Mike. Hopefully you got something useful out of that. Interesting to hear what you think is the most innovative mechanic you've seen in the last 5 years. It'd be cool to know. Give us a shout on Facebook. Let us know, or Twitter. Yeah.
And if anybody else has a question, the same way. Send them or raise. Absolutely. We'll be happy to answer them in the next episode.
Yeah, always looking for more input from people. It makes coming up with show topics a lot easier. All right, moving into news. So I got a couple picks here. First, I'm going to start with some Kickstarter news. So Toughest Girls in the Galaxy Part 2 has launched. So it's their Light and Darkness Kickstarter. And that runs until April 8th. And that's by the Raging Heroes folks. And there are some gorgeous models there. I picked up some Raging Heroes models for a friend of mine last year. Some of their, I guess, Dark Eldar type models. And I was really impressed with the sculpts. And looking now at the artwork and some of the early designs for what they're doing at this Kickstarter, there's some really amazing stuff. Some very cool not Imperial Guard. And what? Come on.
Yeah, it's true.
Let's face it, right? That's what they are.
Yeah, not Sister of Battle, not Eldar, not Dark Eldar.
Yeah, exactly.
Mostly. But yeah, Imperial Guard too.
Yeah, I mean, and the Kickstarter is totally funded. There's 9 days to go. They've got $500,000 out of the $30,000 goal. So they will be producing these. And you know, I have to say I'm tempted, even though I haven't played my sisters in a couple of years, I'm tempted to pick a couple models because they look cool.
Yeah. It does make them more dynamic and less old and stiff than the
metal cool looking ones. You know, Seraphim type stuff. They have, there's just a lot of really, really cool things.
Yeah.
They even have the Cold One Cavalry for the
for
the Dark Elves that look awesome. So much better than the GW Cold Ones.
What I like the most, and it's strange because it's none of the ladies they have. It's the minions they have for one of the, I don't know which faction, which are all 6 small creatures that elves, like familiars or stuff like that. They kind of look like gremlins or goblins from Labyrinth or stuff like that. I like those kits.
I don't think I've seen those.
Oh, they're in the page somewhere. They're really not made a major item. So I can easily see why you might have missed them. But that's what stood out for me.
I'm looking, and I still can't find them. So I'm going to have to
look
very carefully at this when I'm not in the middle of the podcast.
Yep. I'll get a link and send that to your way.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so the Kickstarter is definitely worth checking out. I mean, I'm pretty much Kickstartered out over the last couple of years. I haven't backed anything in quite a while, and this is really, really tempting me, folks. It's worth looking at. Even if you just want to paint something. Aside from that, interesting news from Ronnie Renton over at Mantic. So I was reading a blog post today of his, and he was talking about second edition Kings of War and how they're really listening to people, like the players, and they're taking the input, you know, which is always good and always interesting. But one of the other things he kind of let slip was that they're going to produce a army list book, like a supplement, which is going to contain army lists for non-Mantic armies for Kings of War. So there's going to be some historical stuff. There's going to be some fantasy stuff, armies and model write-ups for, you know, stuff that they don't produce, which maybe a certain other company might produce. A certain other company that kind of destroyed their fantasy game this summer, or this winter. So, you know, if you're looking for something else to play, well, eventually down the road in the not too distant future, you'll have another option to use that fantasy army you have. So I think that's kind of neat. I think Ronnie really saw the opportunity there to take advantage of the uncertainty in the whole Warhammer Fantasy fan base and try to get some people to shift to Kings. So I don't know how successful it's going to be, but it's always nice he's thinking, and it's nice to know that my armies won't be complete scrap at the dawn of 9th edition this summer. You know, at least I'll have a viable alternative. Yeah, and that's it for my news picks. Antoine, what did you find this week?
Well, this isn't from this week, but it's the Relic Knight Goes Digital. So they now have a app on the iDevices and Androids for the rules in the dashboard. So I think you tried that already.
Yeah, I played with it on at launch, like on the day it launched. Yeah.
I think it was buggy. Yeah, it was buggy, and at launch it was also available only on iDevice, not on the Android one. But Android have been released since then, so I'm going to download that and play with it. But I haven't tried it yet, so we'll see. It's a neat idea. It's a bit similar to War Room for Predator Press for War Machine and Hordes, which is a nice for reference, at least. It's carrying the book with you. So,
it's a good idea. I really like War Room, so I think this has a lot of potential.
Yeah.
And it's only going to get better, right? It's still early days for the app, so it'll only get better.
Yeah. They'll update it and correct stuff and add new options. And my second pick is from Solo Pop Miniature also. It's the Ninja All-Stars Kickstarter that's been launched this week, early this week or last week, and it's running until April 20th. It's a cool Shibi Ninja
arena battles, I think.
Arena battle, or it's like all kind of scenarios during a tournament, like the Moon Princess tournament or something like that. So all clans fight for the supreme title of the champion for that year or something like that.
So it's Mortal Kombat done chibi.
It's not one versus one. So you assemble a team. So you have teams of ninja trying to do different tasks.
Right. Okay, cool.
So instead of being just combat, you might have to sneak somewhere or doing stuff like that. It's the full rules are not yet available, but they started to show some of the play documents.
Okay.
So how to play documents.
But is I there a play video yet?
No, not yet.
Okay, because that'd be cool.
There's probably one coming soon, so that's one I'm watching. I pledged it for a buck just to be able to get the updates, and I'll probably get my pledge to full support before the end. I'm a big, big fan of everything Soda Pop does, and especially their chibi miniatures. And there are some sweet ones coming with that Kickstarter. So
I'll be honest, I looked at the Kickstarter, and I didn't quite understand the pledge levels.
Well, there's only one. There was only one at the start. So I don't... You probably looked after they added the two special ones.
Yeah, well, they seem to be like, I guess it's different teams or whatever you get.
Yeah, so the base pledge level, they at the start, they only had one. And they added after some backer feedback. So the pledge level give you the main box, which come with two generic clans, generic sets of miniature, and two specific faction set of miniature. So the two generic one could be used to play with as any of the clans. And the two specific ones have rules specific for their, and miniature specific to for each role. The two new pledge level give you more of the same. So instead of having just two of the generic ones, you could have more of the faction specific ones. So that they are all faction specific sculpts. Oh,
cause that's what it was. Cause I thought it was like four shrine ninja, I guess, of the generic teams.
Yeah. So you and have then more of them.
Or so you can either have four. Okay, I see. So one's a mix. One is four mm-hmm. generic teams, and one is four of the ones you pick.
Exactly.
The unlocked factions. Okay, yeah, I see.
But you could still get the same thing with the add-ons.
Yeah.
But it's a pre-built starter, a bigger pre-built starter, if you could say it like that, I think. But you could with the basic pledge and just pick and choose what you want added into it.
Well, I'll tell you, if you want, I'd go in on this with you, because the only person I play with is probably you anyway.
Yeah.
So maybe we could do a Geeks of the North co-owned box that you can just keep at your house.
Oh, we could do something like that. And what I like about that one, compared, I really love Super Dungeon Explorer, but up to now, the gameplay has always been one versus many. So it's not the same kind of game.
No, absolutely different style.
Yeah, but Ninja Star, it's one. It's everyone versus everyone. So you could play up to, I think it goes up to four or five, but it's more of a free for all. So you don't have one person playing every turn, and all the others have to share and think about what they're going to do, but only have some activation every turn.
Yeah, it's not a cooperative game, right?
Everyone play the same thing. So. Yeah, it's not a cooperative or semi-cooperative game, which they call most of the time for Descent or SDA-like games. So I like that it doesn't offer the same type of gameplay.
Yeah, so, it's something. It's divergent from Super Dungeon Explorer.
Yeah. So that's what I'm looking for.
And the models are pretty awesome. Torn.
Oh, yeah, they are. I'm more of a pirate guy, but chibis for ninjas is fine. Everything chibi, almost.
Well, I'm sure they're glad that you approve.
Yeah.
I'm sure, you know, Ross and the gang will sleep easier at night.
I'm sure they don't need that. And they already released a pirate anyway, so for a Super Dungeon Explorer, so I'm fine.
Well, there you go. Yeah. All right.
And that's it for my news pick. So.
Okay, cool. So I guess we'll take a quick break, and then we'll come back with our main topic. So be right back, geeks. And we're back. On to the main event, the main topic, painting for a competition. And not just painting, actually. also kind of selecting the model and like and the more, thought process.
More planning for painting.
Yeah,
for
exactly. The kind of thought process, not really getting the nitty gritty of the painting aspect, but just, you know, how do you mentally prepare yourself for it and, you know, kind of pick your project. And it's been kind of, you know, in the front of my mind lately, because I recently decided I was going to go to ReaperCon at the end of the month. And this is mostly because Jessica Rich, who is a pretty well-known painter, she won third overall at Crystal Brush this year, and she's the studio painter for Darksword Miniatures. She basically told me I had to go to ReaperCon, and then she basically told me I had to bring something to enter in the competition. Not being a competitive player or painter, I was apprehensive about this, but she insists, so... the good news is it's an open format, like the ND Open painting competition that Metzger Fontaine ran.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just a first, second, third like Crystal Brush. It's actually just open categories and open format, so you get graded among your peers to like a relative level, as opposed to a this model is absolutely better than that model, which is absolutely better than that other model.
Yeah.
So that's nice. So, yeah, you know, when I said I was going to do this, it's a big step for me because it's not what I normally do. So I try to think, what am I going to paint? Because usually when I paint models, I'm painting for armies, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not painting for a display piece, or I'm not looking at the model like, oh, I think this would look good with the type of, you know, basing I'm envisioning, and it's going to tell a story. And that's just not what I do.
Yeah, you paint what you need to play.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a whole new approach, and it's pretty intimidating. So, you know, I've got a huge collection of miniatures, but again, none of them were really bought with the purpose of displaying them. So it's like, oh, what am I going to do? And, you know, this is a Reaper thing, so I'm like, should I bring a Reaper model? I don't think I own a Reaper model.
Yeah, I don't. That's something I don't know at all.
You know? Biggest miniature company in the world, they're one of them, and I don't own a single model they make, or if I do, I don't know I own it.
Well, you usually buy stuff to play with, and
exactly,
their piece are painting piece or at worst RPG piece.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I going through my collection, what do I bring? And the sad truth is that a lot of models, you know, for armies don't necessarily make good display pieces.
Nope. That's true.
Unless you're going to do lots of conversions and stuff, which I don't really have the time to do. So I need to find a model that's gonna kind of pop without requiring a whole, like, structural rework with tons of green stuff, which I can't sculpt. I'm not a sculptor. I'm not artistic by nature. So this should be interesting. So, I don't know. I mean, you've entered in painting competitions before. What are kind of your thoughts when you've... painted pieces for display?
Well, most of the time I've been painting army piece like you, but I tried to put them to display level. I haven't really painted anything just for display, except the Rivet Wars diorama I did last year.
Oh, that thing was amazing, though.
Yeah.
Maybe I should steal that.
That was built for the idea. Oh, you could prime over it and repaint it.
No, I just felt, I'll just submit it as mine. No, it's all good.
Mm-hmm, I'm sure. Yeah, I'm pretty sure people saw it at Gen Con last year.
Yeah, I think actually Jessica Rich was one of the judges at Gen Con last year, so it's not going to work so well.
No, it's not going to work that good for you.
And the funny thing is, I know Rhonda Bender was a judge, and she's actually at ReaperCon too.
Mm-hmm.
Along with Jim Wapple and a bunch of other people. So yeah, that's not going to work at all. You know, so I'm trying to pick stuff, and I'm going through my collection. You know, I was like, okay, well, I've got this gorgeous, you know, Magnir Jotun from Mirs, which I could paint. But it's a big piece. And yeah. I'm going there on a business trip. I'm kind of like making a side trip to ReaperCon. So I've already got to take paints and all this other stuff that I wasn't planning on packing in for my business trip. And now I'm going to pack a giant, like, 10-inch tall model. Like, that doesn't work. So,
but it looks good.
Oh, it's a gorgeous piece, and I'm really looking forward to painting it. But it doesn't suit my purpose.
Maybe one of the Stonehaven dwarves.
You know, that's an interesting thought. I'd forgotten about those. I know
they're pretty small, But the skulls are cool. That's one of the pieces I'm working on.
You know what? That's a great idea. I'd forgotten I bought those. I think I even know where they are. I think.
That's good.
You know, I thought about Relic Knight stuff. But
You have the old metal ones, at least.
Well, no, I have one shot in old metal.
Yeah, and that's a big one to do.
Yeah, and it's not a fun model.
You probably have a month of assembly with her.
Yeah. Actually, I've got the Red Riding Hood one, too, with the wolf. Now that I think about it, I've got that one as well.
Oh, that's a cool one.
Yeah. I think in the end, what I decided I'm going to do, there's a couple pieces I'm looking at.
Because you can enter more. Is there a minimum at their format? Because I know some open format do have a minimum of number of models to enter in their display.
Really? I didn't know that. You know what? Let's take a quick look. Contest rules. I had no idea.
I think so. I only entered once in a open format, but I kind of remember seeing that somewhere.
Okay.
And even then, you could enter, because if it's judged as the Northern Defender one, the display is considered as a hold, but one of the model was picked among all the model you entered. So you could enter other models you have and your newer piece, and the newer piece would probably be picked as the main one to judge your display on, and the rest wouldn't matter that much.
Okay, so in the basic categories, I'm just looking at the rules quickly right now. So the basic categories, there's the painter's division, which is what I'd enter, because I'm not doing a free sculpt or anything. That'd be an open division, which I'm not going to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
The scoring breakdown is 5% on the difficulty of the model, 10% on creativity, 10% on workmanship, 70% on presentation, 70% on painting skill, 5% on presentation.
Okay.
So really, it's all about the painting.
Mm-hmm.
Other rules. Any number of entries are permitted per painter per division, but only one of the painter's entries in each division will be judged.
Oh, okay. That's good.
Basing adds to the presentation value of your entry. Be creative. You know, there's rules for large models and stuff. Not really worried about that. Yep. That's basically it. Some other simple stuff, but nothing major. So yeah, it's truly a painter's competition, and it's you bring what you want and they only take your best. Now, considering all the people that are going there, I'll be lucky if I make it to I'll be happy actually if I make it to a bronze level.
Mm-hmm.
That would be cool. I doubt I would do that. I don't, my painting's not horrible, but I don't think I'm there, especially not in that company.
But yeah, that's a fine. Pretty high level of painting right there.
Yeah, well, exactly. You know, when people like Justin McCoy are considered kind of not as well established,
yeah.
There's very little chance I will be placing anywhere. But that's okay. So at least they'll keep Jessica from killing me. So, yeah. So I think the models I want to do, you know, the Stonehaven Mini, that's a good idea.
And it might be quicker to paint, so you could get that one and maybe a second one painted.
Yeah, so I'm going to look. So what my original thoughts were from Cool Mini or Not's Wrath of Kings line.
Yep.
The Scorza Skirmisher, the female model. So that is a female werewolf from the Gorizzi army or mm-hmm. faction. And she's got two sword blades, kind of like two swords held behind her back.
They're kind of dancing, sneaky assassin werewolves.
Kind of. She's not really so much dancing or sneaky. She's kind of standing straight up in the middle of the base, like very, very obvious.
Okay, okay.
But the sword pose is reminiscent of Rackham's Wolfenwein.
Yeah.
Which makes sense because I believe the sculptor is the same.
Mm-hmm.
So that model I thought might be interesting. Another thought is Wild West Exodus. I picked up some models at Adepticon. So I've got a couple of character models. One called the Alt Cap Sirage, which I thought was kind of cool looking. I figured he might be a nice model to paint up, try something different with. And the other one is Alt Cap Auron.
And does any of those models ring? Well, ring gives you an idea for a base to go with them, just for like a cool a little story to go for the base to add to the team or the atmosphere of the model.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. In terms of, like, basing the... I don't know enough about WoW's Exodus to really kind of know what the world is like thematically. So basing it thematically would be tough.
That I could help with. So they are sci-fi Far West.
Yeah.
No steam.
Yeah, no steam. Well, their sci-fi is true sci-fi.
Yeah, electricity and... strange technology, but nothing steam related.
Yeah. Though the odd thing is my faction doesn't use the tech. But I could definitely see the, what is it called? The Skorza?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's a werewolf, I could definitely see doing something, you know, outdoors on a plane in like a savannah or something. Because it's kind of how they always base them. I don't know. I'm sure I could do something with it. Especially since that model... I don't have to worry about preserving a base to play with the model. Because it was a model I bought years ago just for the joy of painting. For that matter, I have old Confrontation figs, like some of the old Wolfen.
Which are still
that nice. Might look cool. Yeah, they're still very nice figs. You know, maybe something like that. I've also got a couple Dark Age models. That were some of the Saints. Which were kind of nice models and different.
If you want to have a wow factor... For stuff people don't know, you could enter some of your Vitiers.
That's true. I can enter the ones you painted for me. You know, I looked at the Vitiers last night. I had the box open in my hands. I was actually looking for the Armistice League little Britannians.
The Britannians football.
The football team, yeah. Because I thought that'd be funny to enter.
Yes.
So, and they're tiny, right? So they're quick to paint. So there is some thoughts going on for something like that. You know, maybe do a little diorama of a football pitch. With, like, the guys all lined up ready to play or something.
That would be cool.
Know. Yeah. But again, the problem is time, right? I don't have 3 months to plan this. I've got 3 weeks to, you know, complete a model and paint it. So I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to start with the painting of the model. And then when the model's done, go, okay, how do I want to display this? It might be kind of a backwards thing to do, because usually you want to plan everything as one. But since painting is so heavily weighted, I think I want to spend more time painting the model and less time worrying about the base of this particular competition. Which generally is a bad idea for when you're trying to paint a competition piece. Because the idea is you want to look at composition of the piece. Right? With the base, the story the model's trying to tell, and the painting, positioning, conversion work, all that stuff, because it's all about the whole, right? It's all about the complete thing.
The generic atmosphere the piece sends out.
And that's, you know, if you look at the winners of the Crystal Brush this year, you know, some great examples there. The overall winner was a big space marine, sculpted by the painter and beautifully painted, but there wasn't really much of a story there.
No, it was a single.
But if you look at what came in
the second place,
place. Yeah, exactly. That was by Ben Comets, and it's like a little orc and goblin diorama of, is it an inn or something? I'm trying to remember what it is.
An opium den.
Oh, is that what it is? Something like that, yeah. Because inside, I know there's like a little goblin and there's an arm on the table, like some sort of syringe or something next to it. And it's super detailed, super well done, and it has a certain character to it, right? Because of the whole piece. Whereas the Space Marine is really cool looking, but he's just a Space Marine. And if you look at the what came in third place, Jessica Rich's, I think the piece was called Dance Macabre. Yeah. she was painting the models from Kingdom Death. It's the Flower Witch, I think it's called. And it's positioned in front of this mirror or dream catcher-like thing that is supposed to be showing her reflection. Except the reflection in the mirror is just a skeletal figure and kind of enveloped in flowers and petals. You know, so it was a really cool overall piece. And when you look at it, you look at it as one big piece. Mm-hmm. Same as with Ben Comet's thing. You're not looking at individual models on a base. It all draws itself together, and it's one piece of art. And you know, that requires so much planning.
But you don't have to go to that level to have a team for it.
No, absolutely not.
Scorza. I would need to see the model, but the blades are in her back, I think.
Yeah, ask and ye shall receive. Yeah. Give me 1 second. So you should be able to see the model now. Through the miracles of the interwebs.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's the one I thought. Yeah, extending the base, and like she is, she's kind of looked like resting after the battle instead of preparing for it. Like after she had done a killing blow or something. So you could have a bigger base with blood splatter on it. And she's done.
Yeah, or have her standing over something. Yeah. Or...
And you don't need to sculpt the whole or add the whole piece of the enemy. But just like maybe an arm or just the blood splatter and still have blood on her blade. To make her feel like she's just taking a pose during the combat or something like that.
Yeah, or maybe if you placed her on, because she's kind of standing on a rock, if you place that kind of like up high, like she's on an outcropping or something, looking down, because she does kind of look like she's looking down.
Yes.
So if you have like on an outcropping, like she's ready to jump down on something. Yeah. But the model is gorgeous. It's got so much detail. And there's some good opportunity to do a little bit of freehand on there. And I think it'll lend itself to some basic airbrushing to get some of the basic colors in. And they can do a lot of brush work for.
Yeah, there's multiple possible stories with that model to just give an idea.
So the thing is, it's about the pose of the model, right? Mm-hmm. 'Cause that's the other thing. When I look at the Holy Order of Man models, they're really, really nice. But there's... I don't know. It's hard to tell a story, except for maybe Sirkan Abner, who's like the army leader. He kind of looks like he's standing out over something. And he's got his arm out, and he's got one fist kind of clenched near his torso, and his other hand is out pointing with a scepter. Like, he's kind of more dynamically posed. Like, I could see doing something with him. The other thing I find neat with the WoW's Exodus models is that their bases are like mini plinths.
Yes.
Here, I can actually send you a link to this model, too. So you can kind of get an idea.
Yeah, I was looking at that one, exactly. Yeah, this one has a feel, like a story with him already.
Yeah, so. Exactly. He looks... Yeah, exactly. He looks like he's trying to tell... Like the model's trying to tell a story, as opposed to... The other two guys I was looking at, which are just kind of, you know, armored, chunky soldier guys. Mm-hmm. They don't have the same feel at all.
That's totally out of the idea of what we're talking about. But the name of those models are so complicated for nothing.
What, Sirkan Abner?
Yeah, but all the others, Alt-Cap Oren, Alt-Cap. Sirag, Mimremzane.
Yeah, I don't know what alt cap means.
So, alternate captain, I have no idea. But where are those names coming from?
I don't know. On another complete side note, I totally love the vehicles for this game. They are so ridiculous looking.
I just saw the tumbler for the Holy Order. Their light support... Wheel of Death?
Oh, I don't That's think... That's cool. The Tumbler? Yeah. Oh, jeez. I hadn't seen that. I actually ordered the Spear of Light, mm-hmm. which is like their motorcycle. I had never seen this Tumblr thing. That is weird looking. It will be mine. But anyway, I digress. Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, you've painted for competitions, I believe. I mean, it's too bad Yom isn't here. Mm-hmm. Just for... this is kind of his specialty.
He did paint especially for a competition.
Yeah, absolutely. And it would totally be interesting to get his take on this. But just it's too hard sometimes to coordinate everyone. And with your baby and my work schedule, it's tough to get everyone together. But I'm sure you'd have some very interesting input. At the indie painting competition this year, did you enter
pieces? Yes, I did. I entered four or five.
Interesting. Okay, what did you enter?
Give me once again, because I don't even remember everything, but it's on my blog. So I entered four. It was an open format, so I could enter multiple
types. Right, so same style as the Reaper one.
And what I did enter are... The Baron Celsius von Fahrenheit, the steampunk figure
right,
I painted of a friend. I entered Helga the Conqueror, the Pharaoh Warlock for Ords.
Mm-hmm.
I entered my Pacer to have something sci-fi in the lot. And I was pretty happy with the paint job. It's not competition level, but it's bright and it's eye-catching. The Pacer for Relic Knights. And I entered my diorama. The Rivet Wars diorama.
Okay. And
those four pieces are probably the best piece I painted in the year. Helga is probably technically the best one. But in the end, my display was judged on Baron Celsius von Fahrenheit because of the story of the model and the generic light with him, and the bases did tell a story instead of just being playing bases with just sand and some flock and everything. So he was my judging piece, and I ended up getting a bronze level for my display.
Oh, nice. Yep. Okay.
Pretty happy with it. And I also, my Rivet War diorama got the Prix de la Citadelle, which is a special prize they give for something that kind of show the history of the Canadian military. So the piece does give a good World War One trench warfare idea. So I got that special prize.
That's funny. And it's true, right? It does convey trench warfare. I mean, there's corpses lying down. There's it certainly does convey that look. But this is funny because the rivets.
Yes,
right?
yes, for sure.
It just seems like a very serious award to give to a chibi-ish type display. So that's awesome. I approve.
Yeah, so of those four pieces, the Pacer was not painted for competition at all. Helga, I painted her at a competition level, but I didn't do the base and everything to that level. She was painted for play, but I pushed the limit of the quality of the painting on the piece. So it's like a mid-level. And the Baron he wasn't painted to the same level as Helga, but there was more story going with him. So that's why in the end he went for that one. And of all those pieces, only the diorama was redone for competition.
So that's interesting. So I don't know what the weights were for like the elements, like how they judge stuff. It'd be interesting to know how it differed from ReaperCon, the way they weighted stuff.
Yeah.
Or are going to weight stuff.
I have no idea. And that will be interesting to see after the ReaperCon 2 when you come back. Because you'll have an experience in another open format, which will be interesting.
Yeah, and I want to push the models to the best of my, you know, if I'm gonna enter something, I want to do my best. I'm concerned because the other thing is I know what my weaknesses are in models too, in painting. So I'm trying to debate if I want to pick models that I know don't really show my painting flaws.
Well, that's a way to do it.
Because that's another element of competition, mm-hmm. right? Is you try to pick models that showcase your abilities best. So one of my greatest weak points is metallics. My metallics always look very flat, which is one of the reasons I actually picked up the Vallejo liquid gold metallics, because I wanted to try something that would look a little different, maybe make them pop, and blend them more seamlessly. Because one of the things I've read about those liquid gold metallics is that they transition very well from one to the other because they're so reflective. Mm-hmm. They hide the kind of rougher transitions, and metallics generally are really tough to blend from one color to the next. Anyway, I think what most good metallic painters do, and correct me if I'm wrong, because you actually do have gorgeous metallics, is you do a lot of glazing to kind of build your shadows and hide your transitions, right?
So a lot of layering and glazing.
Yeah, the other thing I was debating on doing is attempting to do NMM. I wouldn't want to do it for an army, but to do it for one or two pieces.
Yeah. NMM is cool, but that's also something that's best for like online display. Because metallics are hard to photograph, but NMM comes out really well for in that case. So
now, what's interesting, just going to interject something. So one of the things I overheard a few times at the event at mm-hmm. Adepticon, talking with the painters, is that some of them feel that real metallics have no place in miniature painting.
Yeah, but that's Walpole and that gang. No?
No, it was not James at all. I didn't talk to James about it. And the reasoning was that you don't get true metallic reflectivity on a small object with conventional acrylic metallic paints. So if you're not getting true reflectivity, there's no point in using real metallics. Because the whole thing about metallics is the way they reflect light. And if the paints don't reflect light properly, you might as well be using NMM, because if you're painting, you're trying to emulate light reflections with metallic paint, you might as well just using NMM technique. And it was an interesting argument.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I agree with it, because actually I used your Helga as an example of well done metallics. But I think as a study, just as a technical, a learning experience, mm-hmm. It might be interesting to try on a small single model. And one of the other reasons I thought about using the Holy Order stuff was I can use James Wapple's pieces as a reference, because he painted all of the Wild West Exodus models. So I can kind of look at his painting of the model and not copy it, because I don't want to do that, but I can at least use his as a reference for how he did his shading and kind of where he placed shadows. Because that's the trick to NMM. It's the placing the shadows to emulate what true reflections would look like. And I know there used to be, or I've seen before, kind of like guidelines for placing shadows for NMM painting. And it was just a bunch of generic shapes, like spheres, squares, rectangles.
Yeah, you can find that online. And they had often in tutorials and stuff like that.
Yeah, and there's like a light source in the picture, and it shows you where the shadows would fall. And I've tried looking for it, and I can't find it anymore. But I know such a document existed at one point.
I saw one this week.
Okay, well, if you can point me in the right direction, that'd be great. Yeah, so really, I've got to sit down and plan the pieces over the next few days.
Mm-hmm. Well, if we have the hobby day we've been talking about this Friday, we could set your base and go with the story and the positioning.
Yeah, I'm totally going to pick your brain on that.
Teamwork. Yeah, which we're already doing anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. yeah, we're totally spitballing ideas right now towards the piece, you know.
Yeah.
I call this project Make Paul a Less Sucky Painter. Actually, when Yom listens to this episode and he hears me say that, he's going to like get all angry at me.
Like he did in the group chat today.
Yeah. He's constantly ragging on me for putting my painting down. But see, I like keeping expectations low. So that way when I do something, everyone's like, wow, it looks amazing. And I go, see, yeah, it looks amazing because no one has any expectations. Because if they expect me to paint like you or Yom and they saw the stuff I do, they'd be like, wow, it looks okay, I guess. So see, I've got it all worked out. I've got it all planned.
Something else to keep in mind that's more for the painting, and that's straight from Rhonda Bender, the class she gave about eye level
at Gen Con last year. Yeah,
Gen Con is more contrast.
Yes, and that's a huge problem with me usually.
With me too. Everything is too dim and doesn't pop out.
Too muted.
Doesn't pop out enough.
Yeah, that's totally been my problem over the years. So I'm really looking to try to do something contrast wise.
Yeah, and that's,
you know, something off my out of my comfort zone, off my beaten path. You know?
That's something I've been getting better during the past year, and one of the main thing is just getting the model I'm painting out of my painting light. I just turn in my chair and look at the model into a different light, not just my specific painting light, but just the generic light from the room. And just doing that changed the color and the angle of the light and everything on it. And it makes me see what I miss, because when it's 5 inches from my face painting, it's not the same as when I get it out of my arm, at arm's length. And
absolutely. And also when we're painting, we tend to have so much light shining down on it that it really gives us a different impression of what the model will look like. You know, and I have a great example where I look at my Circle of Ouroboros when I painted my Warpwolf, my Feral Warpwolf. The fur color and the leather color is different. And if you're holding the model 6 inches away or 10 inches away from your face, you can definitely see it. But you put that model down and 2 feet away, and the leathers and the fur
all blend together.
All look just brown. They're just brown. You can't tell the leather's actually a red, you know, like an umber, and the fur is a dark brown. You cannot tell that. So it's really about, you gotta up that contrast level to make things pop. You know, and I think that's why, if you look at Infinity models, the way Angel paints, right? And they always seem to like jump at you, right? They're super anime colored. They are, you know, they're oranges and bright whites and, you know, completely super contrasting colors. But
even his color, all his shading goes from really dark to really light on each individual pieces of the model.
Yep, exactly. And that's what we're talking about, right? We're talking about that, pump up that contrast. Take the shadows super dark. Take the highlights, you know. What was it Jim Wappel told me? You got to take it, you know, one step past where you think it looks good. Because, you know, when you're doing glazing and everything else, it'll come back in line. You know, so like, don't worry about it. Just go one notch past where you think it's good. And then, you know, don't worry, because you'll bring it back. You know, and there's a lot of good advice out there for this. Yeah, it's an interesting difference in approach for me. So I'm kind of enjoying the experience, though it did keep me up last night as I was lying in bed going, what am I going to paint? What am I going to do? How am I going to do it?
I'm sure. Well, that's good. A new way of seeing the hobby.
Yeah, and I think it's sad to say, but as I get older, I've got less and less time to game.
Yeah, exactly. So that's exactly why I'm doing high-level painting now.
I got to kind of start looking at it this way, because I don't have the time I used to play, which makes me sad, but it's the way it is. Yeah. So we rambled a lot about me painting this. I don't know if we actually covered anything all that useful for people. But hopefully they found it fun to listen to at the very least. But
that's where we were going more, not just painting for competition, but just the mind space on how to get there.
Yeah, and I think Rhonda actually said something really useful last year at Gen Con. It's just like, you can't go into the competition saying, I'm going to win this. No. Right? Because it's a surefire way to really let yourself down. You know? So you kind of go in there and go, I did the best I could and I'm going to learn. And that's also one thing I see from all these painters I spoke to at Adepticon, is that they are some of the most chill people I have ever met. They're like, yeah, I entered competition. Yeah, I hope I win. But you see this other piece? That piece looks amazing. You know, I'm sure on the inside there's some turmoil, and they really want to win. But the experience really shows and how they deal with that stress. It was pretty interesting to see.
And in the open format you're entering into at ReaperCon does help with that mindset.
Oh, absolutely. Because Crystal Brush is really a first, second, third competition.
And the high prize also.
Only for the overalls.
Yeah, I know.
The category prizes don't get, which, it's too bad, I guess. I was actually kind of surprised by the prize distribution because I never looked at it before. So that $10,000 first prize and then $2,000 for second and $1,000 for third. It's a pretty big spread, yes. For models that are all so close.
We're not the first to mention that.
Oh, really?
I know that's something that bugs Mathieu Fontaine also, when we got the interview with him. I don't remember if he had said that during the interview or when outside of recording, but that's also something he doesn't want to get into for the Norton Defender show, because he doesn't like that distribution. It puts too much emphasis on the best of show.
Yeah, it really does. And at that level, I mean, Kirill's piece was gorgeous. The Space Marine was amazing. The freehand was awesome. And if anyone wants to see that model, they can see it on Coleman Yarnot's webpage. But, you get to that level and you look at his and you look at Ben's and you look at Jessica's piece. And there's not a huge skill level difference between the pieces. There's certainly a huge time investment in Kirill's piece, and I'm not taking anything away from it at all. But Ben's piece, from a technical point of view, is just as impressive. And I think Jessica's her piece is a little more subdued. There's a little less going on than Ben's piece. There's not the crazy old background with the building or whatever. But the technical level is still, exceptionally high too. So I think an open format is really a better way to judge these things. And when I discussed it with Rhonda Bender, she said the same thing. She says, if I got seven pieces that I like as a judge, I don't really want to have to pick, three and then, these are the top three and then try to decide which one's first, which one's second, which one's third. So it takes away from the whole experience. And I can totally see that.
Oh, yes. it's a difficult topic to get into, especially as we're not going into technical detail.
Yeah. Well, that's the downside of radio, right? It's hard to talk about technical stuff when you can't really show what you're talking about. So maybe what I'll do is kind of do some work in progress pictures as the models develop. Just get some feedback on the models on the page and kind of let people see what I'm doing. And that's a huge step for me. It's not something I would ever normally do. I've posted, I think, two models in the entire history of my model painting.
So yeah, something like that.
Yeah. So yeah, that'll be interesting to do that. I think hopefully get some good feedback and hopefully the listeners actually enjoy kind of seeing what I do.
And see you go through that process.
Yeah, the planning and the that'll be interesting.
And we'll probably have another show before the competition, so we'll be able to talk again next hobby segment about your progress.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll be talking about that during my hobby piece. Yeah.
if you did end up going with the PC dual select this week, or if you switch midway because you're just not going anywhere with it, or we never know.
Well, let's hope it doesn't turn into that. I'd like to
hope for you.
I'd like to pick a piece and stick with it and not have to switch out. All right. I guess we've kind of talked this to death.
I think so too.
All right. So let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back and we'll wrap up the show. Be right back, geeks. And we're back. So, Antoine, another episode under our belts. Yes. And I think it's going to end up being a little shorter than what we've normally done in the past. Not too much, but a little bit. And that'll probably be the recipe we go for the next foreseeable future.
Yeah, anyway. Cutting the
next little while.
Repeating all the events for nothing probably will help. And as we're only two this time, it also cut down on the
Yeah, the hobby time and the gameplay. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But, you know, quick episodes make it quicker to edit.
That's good for you. And we can get it out the quicker, too.
Exactly. It's to try to get our production schedule back up to where it was, because, you know, people want to listen to us, so we deserve to actually give them something to listen to. Or they deserve that we give them something to listen to. All right, on that note, I don't think we have any shout-outs.
I have a little something. It's not a shout-out, but I just want to mention that I was on All Us Geeks last week for their 31 Days of Podcasting. So I did an interview with Jeff King. It's a small podcast, maybe 20 minutes, something like that. We'll put a link into the show notes. We talk about general podcasting, about Geeks of the North, and a bit about the miniature hobby.
Awesome. I will. You know, I knew that was coming up. I didn't realize you'd done it.
Yeah, you were at Adepticon during that time.
Yeah. Well, I was actually supposed to be podcasting with him from Adepticon. And it was organized by
Jill.
Jill, by a mutual friend of ours, except I basically didn't see her the whole show. So... Though I did see Jordan.
Oh, that's good.
Actually, while I was there, he walked up to me. He's like, "Paul?" I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "It's Jordan." I'm like, "Jordan." He's like, "From the podcast." I'm like, "Oh, sorry." And like, and he was on his way. He was coming out of a tournament, I think, on his way to another tournament, so we didn't really have time to talk. But it was kind of funny. Yeah. So I will look forward to listening. Wasn't there something else you did? I think about it. Something involving some singing or something.
Oh, wow. That doesn't need to be shared. I'm not sure it's even on any public server.
Oh. Okay. Well, you know, I'll tell you what.
I'll explain a bit more so it's less awkward.
It's pretty awkward, Antoine.
All Us Geeks, the podcast was getting 3 years old. So one of their friend last year did a little recording of him as Marilyn Monroe in a dress with makeup and stuff like that, singing Happy Birthday as a joke. And this time, and for this year, he wanted to make it bigger and get other people from the United Geeks Network to do the same. So I didn't have a dress my size around and didn't have a time to shop for one, but I did get my LARPing stuff out and dressed in my great kilt and put some war paint on and sang with the other guys.
That's a video, yep, right? That's obviously a video. Since you're yep. Yeah. Yeah, and that you don't think it's been published yet?
I know they saw the video, but I don't think it's public. I think it was just a downloadable link from a Dropbox somewhere.
Oh, that's unfortunate. Cuz that should be shared.
I'm not sure.
All right. Well, on that note, I think that's everything, yes. Isn't it? All right. So I guess we'll sign off. So I guess we'll be back in a couple weeks.
Bye, geeks.
Thanks for listening to Geeks of the North. If you want to contact us, you can email us at geeksofthenorth@gmail.com. Read our blog at geeksofthenorth.com, like us on Facebook at facebook.com/geeksofthenorth, or follow us on Twitter at geeksofthenorth. You can follow me, Paul, on Twitter at PRFilio, and Antoine at Eltonio Berg. See you in 2 weeks, geeks.
Thank you for checking out a United Geeks Network family member. If you enjoyed it and are looking for other online media with a geek culture slant, head over to UnitedGeeksNetwork.com, where you will find Rolling Dice and Taking Names, a podcast by guys who have a passion for tabletop games and happen to have mics. They discuss all forms of tabletop gaming, from board games to miniatures to RPGs. The United Geeks Network. You can broadcast your geekiness at UnitedGeeksNetwork.com.